At one point in the debate last night in the U.S. Senate, it was about whether President Obama could unilaterally make war in Iraq based on an authorization, a so-called AUMF, more than 13 years old. Here's Senator Dick Durbin.
We are living on borrowed time and we're traveling on vapors. AUMFs that were passed in 2001 and 2002 are hard to wrap around today's challenge.
But unilateral action by presidents in wartime has a long historical precedent. A commander-in-chief in wartime can order a nuclear attack without Congress. LBJ and Richard Nixon escalated the war in Vietnam without Congress. And in 1862, in the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln made one of the riskiest and greatest unilateral decisions in U.S. presidential history. It was a decision that changed the nation forever and completely transformed the bloody battlefields of the North and South. A new book by Todd Brewster tells this story. Lincoln's gamble, the tumultuous 6 months that gave America the Emancipation Proclamation and changed the course of the Civil War. Todd Brewster joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you.
So this is a pretty interesting moment in American history and in the life of one man. Let's just begin at the beginning where you say Lincoln came to the decision that he was going to do an Emancipation Proclamation at a particularly emotional moment at a funeral for a young man.
Well, that's when he announced it to his two closest cabinet members. He had been working on it for some time before that, but in private, in fact, very much in private, in the War Department telegraph office where he'd pull out a piece of paper while he was following the war as the various dispatches would come in and scribble a few thoughts down and get some language going, and then he'd put it back in his drawer and lock up the drawer. No one really knew about it except for one or two of the clerks there. But on a funeral ride, a carriage ride to a funeral of an infant, the son of Secretary of War Edwin Stanton, Lincoln suddenly reveals to Secretary of State Seward and Secretary of the Navy Gideon Welles that he's prepared to issue an Emancipation Proclamation. It was a particularly emotional scene, as you say, and one of the reasons was that Lincoln's son Willie had died only a few months before, and so they're actually in a carriage ride over the same streets to the same cemetery where Lincoln had gone to bury his own son who had died of typhoid, much like James Stanton, the son of Edwin Stanton, had. So the war, his own personal loss, his worries about how to settle this issue of slavery, whether to promote it as a secondary or even a primary mission for the war, this was all contained in this conversation he had in the carriage ride that day.
What's surprising to learn in this book is that the Emancipation Proclamation is on some level a tactic to win the war quickly, that it would constitute an acceleration of the war and its brutality.
The war shifts around 1862, and one of the leading elements is the Emancipation Proclamation. Now it's not just armies fighting against armies. It's armies fighting against societies, against the civil structure, going after the economy, the labor source, and using that as a method of undermining the entire society of the South.
So the Emancipation Proclamation was a chokehold on the labor that supported the South financially. It was also a way of saying, all right, let's have it out. Let's go all the way. And that led to U.S. Grant and Sherman in the tactics that ended the war ultimately years later.
Yes. So one of the arguments for having a brutal war or a hard war is that you stamp out the opposition. It doesn't simmer and rekindle like a fire and start again 2 years later. You wipe it out, which was not as way wars were taught at West Point. The officer corps didn't believe in this. McClellan did not believe in this. McClellan would not fight a war for slavery. And they had sympathies with the South. They looked upon it as more of a police action, a subtle action, just returning the states to the Union, yes. But there's one more aspect about thinking of it as a war measure that's really, really important. And that is that the only way that Lincoln could exercise this power was in his role as commander-in-chief. In other words, if he freed the slaves, it was essentially a taking. It was the removal of private property without just compensation. So the Constitution would have barred it. But he could exercise this power, and this is what he determined, if he exercised it as part of his war powers as commander-in-chief. And this set up this strange irony because now he was, quote-unquote, freeing the slaves in the South in the places that he didn't actually control, and leaving slavery intact in the border states in the North where he did control it, and acting on slavery not as a moral question but purely as a military tactic.
And the Emancipation Proclamation, by this analysis, doesn't really deal with the issue of freedom for the human beings who were slaves. They're still considered property, both in the North and South, and this executive order simply frees them like it might take control of you know, washing machines or cars in driveways.
Well, this is another irony baked into this, is that Lincoln, who abhorred the idea of thinking of slaves as property, had to think of them as property in order to exercise his power as commander-in-chief. And that was the only way he could constitutionally commit himself to this act, which, while a proclamation, you're right, was an executive order. And today we think of proclamations as sort of ceremonial acts, but back then we were thinking of something that was more or less an executive order. And this is why it was important that he follow this up with the 13th Amendment. And, of course, that's the subject of Steven Spielberg's film. Technically, when the war was over, technically the slaves could be re-enslaved, or at least slavery could remain in force in the South because nothing had been done to disturb it.
Who is the Lincoln that you leave us with at the end of this? He's still, you know, in control, and there's much to happen between this moment and his death.
Well, I think what we arrive at from this book is an understanding of the fragility and loneliness of leadership. And for Lincoln in particular, whom we believe, you know, his greatness should suggest that he single-mindedly did the things he knew had to be done for reasons of moral absolutes, when in fact the choice was not that clear for his decision about when, if he should issue an Emancipation Proclamation. We look back on it from the bleachers or after the fact, we think it all seems so inevitable, but the choice was not so clear.
And he retains a sense of skepticism about living with blacks. He doesn't see some diverse melting pot in the future of America.
One of the disappointing things about seeing Lincoln in this period is to see that how pessimistic he was about the future of a biracial America. Like many people in this time, he did not believe in equality. He believed in the end of slavery, but he believed in a very hierarchical sense of the races. And it was his campaign through most of the 6 months and even afterwards to try to find a way to force the black leadership to lead a movement out of America, back to Africa, or to settle in Panama or other parts of South America as a way to give up on this notion that America could be a biracial country. Now, part of that was his inherent racism, which we would call it today at any rate. And part of it was also his fear that the damage that had been done by slavery, the bitterness that came from decades and centuries of having been held in bondage, could never be repaired.
Well, he certainly was on to something in that the healing would require a very, very long time, something we're living today.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the other interesting stories in here is that Lincoln, who did not want a war, of course, wanted an end to slavery, but would have preferred a gradual, compensated end to slavery. His notion of gradual was very extended. He says to Stephen Douglas in 1858, "The final extinction of slavery may take 100 years or more," meaning that it would have lasted into the 1950s. The war probably hastened the end of slavery, certainly hastened the end of slavery, and yet he never could have predicted that.
Todd Brewster, journalist and author of Lincoln's Gamble, The Tumultuous 6 Months That Gave America the Emancipation Proclamation and Changed the Course of the Civil War. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.